Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dale, NAB's Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour, and today I'm really excited to get into a discussion on the dramatic change in policy that is now being announced by the world's largest economies and Australia's largest trading partners. Today I'm joined by Mark Todd, host of the Money Management Show on Sky Business and head of Customer Direct in the NAB Fixed Income Currency and Commodities business. We're going to call that Markets.
Markets
at NAB. Mark's a really highly regarded expert in fixed income and in markets, and we've been really looking forward to this conversation. Mark, thanks for joining me.
Hi, how are you doing?
Yeah, well, thank you.
So Gemma, what will we talk about in markets? The two superpowers are going to battle. It seems to be a one-sided battle, doesn't it?
it's an interesting one. So apparently these trade wars are easy to win. Is that your view?
No, that would be, well, it's interesting. I'd like somebody to point to some evidence about how it was an easy win in a trade war. So one of the things to think about for the people that are listening to this is that the American president has decided that he wants to even the trade arrangements that they have purely based on the finances they have. So in other words, if I engage with somebody and I engage in a trade and I help that community by an imbalance in numbers, so I spend some money in their community and it lifts people from poverty.
Yeah.
I therefore, to the way the president seems to be describing it, it's a negative to me.
Yeah.
Lifting the global economies out of poverty, I could characterise as being positive to me. Mm. I think that would help in a whole array of different engagements, whether it be security, whether it be new markets eventually over time. So I imagine the argument that the president's having right now is the one with China, where he's described putting trade tariffs on non-allies. We, Australia, are an ally, and therefore China, in theory, is a non-ally, which at a geopolitical level, I would suggest, puts us in an awkward position, a big trading partner, and we're now being pushed into a camp where we go, hang on, in respect of this argument, I'm not 100% certain I want to be aligned to one side or the other.
Yeah.
And so short-term gain, we don't have any tariffs, long-term pain around, okay, it keeps coming up, bubbling up. On whose side are you? Are you an Asian nation? Are you what nation are you? Who is your partner in that sense of trade? So I think when the president talks in that simple binary, it's one or the other. We make money or we don't. Some of the people who want to discuss trade and say winning a trade war, that I don't know that that's the win.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the conundrum for everyone to understand. How would you think to win a trade war? What's the outcome? And to China's credit, they've been pushed, they've been tweeted, they've been spoken
they've been tweeted
about.
At. Yes.
Yeah, they've been spoken about in a way that some other nations wouldn't be prepared to take that. They would be quite angry. And I think the president has pushed hard on China, and China has tried to portray itself as the sensible partner in this, and it's manageable. But all nations will have a faction within their community that would say, we won't put up with this. All nations will have that. And though I'm sure I wouldn't characterise China as a democratic country.
I
would say that they would be mindful of their role in global economies.
Yeah.
And would think that they would, from a nationalistic perspective, not want to be talked down to.
Yeah, well, their role is obviously significant. They're Australia's largest trading partner, right?
Yeah. So I think that's one of those things to think about for the viewers that are looking about who's the winner, who's the loser. The response by China today on this Monday has been that the Treasury Secretary Mnuchin has said he's cautiously optimistic. Well, another, what else would he say?
Yeah.
And that China will be sensible and all these sorts of things. When I look at China, I just don't think they're really obvious. In other words, I think they could be really subtle in their approach. and that would make more sense. It plays to the role they like to appear to be, but actually want to be. They want to be a global leader. So they may not rattle the sabre in the same way, but they might rattle the tin in a different way. So it might be around cash, it might be around the way they engage with the US. And I'll be watching that with interest to see how China thinks about responding to, you know, some angry tweets.
It is an extraordinary position to be in. The first time we've ever been governed by tweet. That is new for all of us, I think. So if I put it into simple terms for listeners, certainly when I was at university, which is longer ago than I would like to admit, but a couple of decades ago at university, the standard prevailing view in economics was tariffs were a thing. We have subsequently gotten rid of tariffs to the greatest extent possible because having a free and open economy is better for Australians and it is better for the world. And to your point, we lift people out of poverty where each country is applying its own competitive advantage more than anything else. So we play to our own competitive advantages, and there will be some winners and losers, but in a globalised economy, overall everybody wins, and therefore trade barriers should be removed wherever possible. And the most obvious areas that's occurred obviously has been in the EU, where they removed as many barriers as possible. But as Australia traded increasingly with the US and China and many other areas, that prevailing economic view worked its way into the political sphere, and it's how things operate. So most people now, I imagine, are familiar with the idea that tariffs increase costs for consumers and for producers, and generally speaking, there are fewer winners than losers. Would that be the view that you believe people come to?
So there's a couple of things about that. Kerry O'Brien did a great book where he interviewed Paul Keating after the TV show that he put together about the Keating and the Hawke years and the like. And the tariff story, the conversation came up. And Keating, who was the architect of the reduction of tariffs everywhere, talked about the fact that you need a total package. It's not just remove that number. How do you move people into different quality of life?
Yeah.
And when you hear the president talk about getting people onto the factory floor and changing trades so that we bring manufacturing back into the US, I haven't been won to the argument that people want to go back onto the factory floor.
Yeah.
I think people want to have a community, which means they put down, being on the factory floor gives people work, means that they stay in the community. Keating agreed that people needed work to stay in the community. It was, if it was on the factory floor, was that the right work?
What is the nature of the work? Yeah. It doesn't have to be the factory.
Yeah,
we can replace that work with something more sophisticated where we have a competitive advantage, we
should
do that.
So is work changing? Is the nature of work changing? So if you think about an iPhone's made in a vast array of jurisdictions before it becomes an iPhone, when you think of Alibaba and the way the logistics of life works, when you think about Amazon, is it solely the prevail of trade imbalance that people lose their jobs, or are jobs changing?
Yes.
Artificial intelligence, the whole thing. So that's why I talk about the binary. It's you need to give me the money back, Mr. President.
For what I've lost.
Or are you? Or could you participate in the more complex question of how is work changing so that we are losing these communities? And if you think about it in the farming sector, you look at the change in technology in farming. You look at the size of the machinery, the fact that you can have one man or woman sit in a header and take off and just work by GPS, and where it used to take lots of people to work, that community is being reshaped by the size of the manufacturer, by the size of the machinery. So I think it's a really complex question, and people blame trade because they want to have a target. So Middle America said, why is Mexico, why are they doing so well compared to us? These people work for less money, less protections, all these sorts of things.
Yeah.
You should bring the money back here to us because we want that work. I think if you were to say to the powers that be, can we have a complex conversation?
Yeah.
That's really hard to do in the timescale that people have.
Yes.
You know, it's not like people can sit in front of the TV.
Yeah. It's not a sound, but certainly not a tweet. Right.
As President Obama said, if I watched Fox News, I wouldn't even vote for me.
I didn't know he'd said that. That's
so he said that on the weekend in Sydney. And I think there's this idea that we are not up for complex questions because work and time are limited. We are working really hard just to keep going.
Mm.
And I'm sympathetic to all the people who are doing really hard work. And I'm even more sympathetic to investors trying to make sense of it all.
Mm.
Who's the winner of a trade war, right? I've got no idea.
So the investor response has obviously been dramatic. Mm. And so overnight on Thursday and overnight on Friday, hitting Australian markets on Monday, investors clearly came through university at some point around the same time I did, where you learn that globalised trade is a positive, in anything that limits globalised trade has the potential, it's really important to say, has the potential to be problematic.
So it's a positive for companies.
It is.
There's
indeed.
No doubt it's a positive for companies. So I'm not against global trade.
Mm.
But investors know that it's a positive for companies because it opens markets to their trade. So you can then pick the winner of that open market. So you'd say Apple selling iPhones to China is a win.
Yes.
If Apple are unable to do that, that's a loss.
Yes.
So now you have to work out who are the winners and losers. How do people rebut? And so what does China do? Now, if China's really subtle, okay, then that becomes harder to work out. So let's imagine China decided to change its attitude towards buying US government debt.
So can you just, for those who are listening, talk through quickly those. So the both sides, both the US and China, have announced very specific products they will apply tariffs to. It's not widespread. It's not like everything that comes out of China we're going to hit with the tariff. Everything that comes out of the US we're going to hit with the tariff. And the reason for that is a point that you've just alluded to, which is that the products we buy now are complex.
Yeah.
An iPhone is manufactured in many different jurisdictions, including bits that will have come from Australia because they mine them. So where does one apply a trade barrier so as to affect the trading partner but not yourself?
Yeah.
So where have they chosen to do that?
So America's a driver in things like aluminium,
aluminium.
Iron ore,
mm-hmm.
In terms of intellectual property.
Yeah.
They want to try and put some brakes on what they see as poor behaviour.
Yeah.
China has responded with saying, you just go to the WTO and try and make the case and take it from there.
Yeah.
They have responded with some specific products, about $3 billion versus the US is about $60
billion. Okay, so pretty minor retaliation there.
Pretty modest. And I think they've spoken about the fact that they think they'll be able to do more if they choose. And so that's the real question for people in markets.
Yeah.
So think about it. I just was interested in the idea that no one believes that China will sell all their treasuries, of which they own billions, like $1 trillion, I think it is, in US treasuries. Okay, let's say for example, let's imagine if they did,
mm-hmm.
or imagine if they changed their approach to this.
So this is an illustration, though, of the point that Trump's making, which is there is an imbalance. The imbalance is that the US is hugely indebted to China. China owns a heap of their cash.
So that's good for the US.
Hmm?
China
but
is
not
lending.
Trump's view.
But if Trump is a borrower and he goes to organisations to lend in his business practices.
Yes.
And he can go to
and
China
is,
and
I
they
believe.
Lend
he's
to him.
He's very much a borrower in his business practice.
And they go to China, lends to him at under 3%.
Mm.
That's really good borrowing. So you'd think that he could say, right, let's just keep it all smooth with China. Let's borrow even more money and let's retool America. Let's get the infrastructure spend happening because I can borrow a lot of money. But that's not what's happening.
It does have to be productive infrastructure, though. Walls tend not to be
productive.
Well,
sure. There's that one piece. But the US is rusting away. So there is an element in the US that needs to get resolved. And you've just given, the US has just been given a fiscal holiday. There's huge issuance in the short-dated debt.
What do you mean by a fiscal holiday?
Well, they don't pay as much tax as they once did. So,
and that's just the recent legislative change, right?
So Trump's dropped somebody has to pay for that because it's not as if they're taking a lower cost of living. They're not saying we'll spend less. They just said we'll tax less.
Yes.
We'll spend the same amount.
Yes.
And we actually want to spend more because we have to fix up the infrastructure. So we want to spend more, so we have to borrow more. So the US's borrowing program has really taken off. So it's now seen huge amounts of borrowing. They're not making as much money because they don't claim as much money. They're not taking as much. Mm-hmm. And they're hoping that that will stimulate activity. Mm. So there'll be more to the pie will be bigger through activity rather than spending, through tax spending. So the point is interesting. If the if China decides to change its view on the funding of the US, well, that funding of the US isn't just the US government. It goes everywhere.
Yeah.
It would mean that US mortgage rates, which have gone up for the last 11 weeks, would go higher yet again.
Mm-hmm. So that's where someone goes to the bank and says, I want to borrow to buy a house for the first time.
In the US, you can do a 30-year mortgage. Mm-hmm. Over the last 11 weeks, it's gone higher. Every week, it's gone higher in the mortgage costs.
Right.
So that means...
So if I went in 12 weeks ago, they might say it cost 2% and this week it costs...
Oh, 3. You know, let's say it's... I have to look at those numbers, but it's in the threes.
Mm-hmm. And this week it's 3.5.
It's like 380 something, I think it is. But I'll have to. I just look at the
That's
movement.
That's quite significant.
It's well for 11 weeks. So what that the way that's interesting is, it's not just the new home buyers that it's impacting. What does it do to new homes?
Yeah.
What does it do to people who might sell their home and buy another one and change the mortgage?
Yes.
So I have a mortgage on house A. I want to sell house A and buy house B. I need to either get more money or refinance. Okay, it's now higher. So what does that do to the ramifications for, in my mind, the tax changes that would have gone down to the worker? You work at Walmart, you make an extra few bucks an hour. Goes back into the mortgage costs.
Yes.
And that's if China, that's before China steps out.
That's before
this
anything
is happening
has changed
now.
In the money market.
So let's say China says, you know what, I don't really want to buy as many US treasuries as before. What does that do
I'd
to
rather
their...
not continuing to fund your tax holiday.
So what does it do to their, what does it do to the US currency?
Interesting.
I don't need US dollars. I'm going to take it back and I'm going to put it into Europe. I'm going to invest in Europe. I'm going to invest in, you know, in Australia. I'm going to invest in Latin America. I don't want US dollars. What does that do to the US dollars? So the US goes lower. It's this sort of, these sorts of very complex responses, I don't think China tweets.
Yeah, no, their policy announcements are somewhat different in terms of the medium, let's say.
Yeah, so I think it's something for the listeners to think about the complexity. So there is there a flight to safety? Well, everyone tells me the yen, okay. For people listening to this, they probably aren't buying yen. Is there a flight to safety around different asset classes that you can locally tap into? I think we always talk about a rebalancing in getting into global equities. Well, okay, that's fine. Just make sure you're prepared for a rocky ride.
Yeah.
You know, global economies look strong. They do look better. That all looks good. Central banks have done a great job. But we now have this capacity to create a self-inflicted wound around complex ideas that we've said are simple. They're winnable.
Yeah, so it's such an interesting point that global debt is dramatically higher than it was prior to the GFC, right?
It's getting higher. It's definitely moving up, driven by central bank wanting it to move up.
Yeah.
But
we have synchronized global growth. We have equity markets at extraordinary levels despite two wobbles so far this year, and obviously the most recent wobble is very recent as a result of some of these announcements. There are people who have been wondering how much longer the Goldilocks economy can run.
Well, it's only just really recently
happened. Is this a tipping point, do you think?
It's only just happened recently in Europe and Japan, and China's continued on. We haven't really missed a beat to an extent. So the US has been improving off a very low base, and it's very modest growth, 2.5-3%.
Yeah.
So it's coming from a low base. So yes. I don't see it being a problem right now. I think the central banks have done a lot of work to get it right. So I imagine, in my mind, that when you hear the central banks talk about the changes in equity valuations, they talk about this is the correction you need to have.
Yeah.
If that correction starts to impact the consumer, as in higher mortgage costs,
that's obviously one that hurts.
I imagine that the central banks of the world will step back in to participate, to keep the economy stimulated, to keep them moving. Because having spent trillions of dollars.
To what extent can they do that, do you think? I mean, how much lower can they go?
They improved it. They got it to where it is. They've lifted rates. They've done all that sort of stuff. Mm. They're reducing their bond buying programs. They're making, you know, they're making the financial world stand on its own 2 feet. If they felt that it needed stimulus, they could stimulate a whole range of different ways.
Okay.
Right now, the US are trying to deal with the stimulus that they've been delivered in terms of the tax cuts.
Mm.
So they just want to see what happens there.
Yeah.
If there is no net effect, and I would be stunned that there was no net effect, but they just need to manage the effect.
Mm.
The world just got more complex. It got more complex in December.
Mm.
And everyone's trying to understand it. So tax has changed.
Mm.
Globally, tax seems to want to change.
So just to remind everybody, when you take a tax rate from 30-something percent to 20-something percent, the impact on company profits is quite substantial.
Vodafone said they'll have an extra $1 billion.
There you go.
And so when you hear them say that, you think, I thought you were supposed to give it to your workers.
Yeah, but that $1 billion, do you think you might want to
but
share
that could
it?
be going into the shareholders.
Yep. So that's been the billion dollar question,
complexity.
Mm.
So where did the money, where does the money reside? So Walmart said, I think they said they make $340 million. Oh, let's say Walmart make $400 million. I'm not quite sure, but they said they'd spend 300 and something of it in wages.
Yes.
And because so if you think about the way Walmart was characterized, that was, everyone would say that a large percentage of the Walmart employees are also their customers.
Yes.
So am I taking that stimulus, giving it to the workers, thinking it'll come back into me? It's that sort
that
of...
That multiplier effect.
And that's what I'm saying. The world just got more complex when you do these broad-based tax changes and saying, okay, where does it start to show itself, raise its investment head, so you can say, I can buy onto that.
Yeah.
And then you add over to that, okay, here's a change in how we approach the rest of the world from a trade perspective.
Mm.
Right. So what happens to Boeing? What happens to airplanes? What happens to people who then say, I don't want to buy that because you're US, I'm going to buy French airplane makers? Or you know, it becomes much more complex around understanding how it all plays out.
It is an interesting time. You made a comment about rate hikes in the US, so they've been certainly intimating that is the goal for quite some time, and they're slowly moving in that direction. Do you think that's going to continue?
Yeah, I think they feel comfortable at this point in time.
Even with the tax
cuts. They got March in because the tax cuts meant that they felt that the economies were going well.
Yep.
That's planned, that's done. What happens going forward? Bill Gross said that he thinks they've overestimated. Now they have a history over the last few years of overestimating how many hikes they can get into the system.
Yes, I think every year we say there's going to be four, and every year there are not four.
Yeah, so Bill Gross said that he thinks they've got that wrong because he is worried that there's a weakness within the economy, but I think everyone thinks it's about there's a fragility around what's the policy setting? What does that look like?
Yeah.
And again, it's just more complex to be able to say, I feel comfortable on my predictions because the rest of the world will be looking at it again. I don't even know how to engage with the US right now.
Yeah. Yeah, the levers that are being pulled. First of all, there are many levers being pulled at the same time, which is not always true. You know, in Australia, monetary policy has not changed for quite some time, and it's certainly very slow when it does, and and fiscal policy is not moving dramatically in different directions. So the idea that one economy and one as large as the US, they're pulling all sorts of levers all at the same time.
Yeah, well, so one of the things to think about is that prior to President Trump, and even halfway through it in the first half of his 1 year tenure, it was hard to see the impact of government on people. You weren't feeling it. You weren't feeling the policy. Then all of a sudden, now you're feeling
it's coming.
Tax, it's trade, hang on.
Yeah.
They're having a far greater impact on the lives of people now.
Yes.
And you have to work out over time, I have no view whether that's good or bad, but you have to work out over time what that means if you're an investor.
So you mentioned the investor. What does the investor do in this environment? There's a lot of information, and I think the challenge for people is, sometimes I'm participating in the conversation, sometimes I'm observing it. You know, news is coming as you are reading the previous piece of news.
Yeah, I think you need to put the white noise to one side and just think that Donald Trump's a unifier. he unifies everyone against him. he's good at doing that, and so you think, okay, I can't work out what will happen in his response to how people combat him. I have to put that to one side and think, if I look at my portfolio, what are my goals, and have my goals changed?
You know, sometimes I'm participating in the conversation, sometimes I'm observing it. You know, news is coming as you are reading the previous piece of news.
Yeah, I think you need to put the white noise to one side and just think that Donald Trump's a unifier. He unifies everyone against him. he's good at doing that, and so you think, okay, I can't work out what will happen in his response to how people combat him. I have to put that to one side and think, if I look at my portfolio, what are my goals, and have my goals changed? And so if I look at those goals and then I say, how much am I prepared to risk to win these goals, to meet these, and can I afford to risk it? Because if I'm wrong, if somebody's wrong in the construction of their portfolio and the markets make an adjudication and you lose money, you know, you only lose money if you sell, but you have revaluations. So I think you need to decide, what's the portfolio, what is it attempting to achieve, and how much am I putting on black? Am I risking everything to make a 10% return? And do I need that, and what are the other alternatives to that strategy? And I think a lot of people need to price the probability of failure and the ramifications of that probability. So that might mean you have to sit in some more conservative assets for a few months, years, whatever it might be. So you have got a buffer that makes you sleep well at night. Or you're dollar cost averaging and you don't care. You've got a long way to your retirement. And so you just have to be looking at, you know, being a regular investor in the market and working out what assets you like and what you're comfortable with. And that's the key to a lot of this. Be comfortable with the asset class. When somebody gives you a tip on buying X, that's probably not the good one to buy, because you don't know enough about it. And you really need to get under the bonnet to say, I feel really comfortable at this organisation.
I think you've alluded to it. My view would be, even where someone has a portfolio that's constructed around a specific set of objectives and goals, a specific asset allocation, they're clear on what they believe is going to be their expected rate of return, the risk that that may not occur has just risen quite dramatically, depending on where you are. If you were in a fairly conservative portfolio, the risk may not have changed a great deal. But if you are diversified internationally and you've been quite specific in the sectors you're trying to back and so on, then you may be somewhat more exposed than you may have imagined previously.
It's just much more volatile. It is, you know, if you've got market responses, as a consequence, you're going to be more volatile. You know, more people will be going to cash right now. And you'd have to make a decision. What's changed in your goals and your construction of your portfolio that means you've got to go to cash? Because if you go to cash in Australia, you're not going to get a massive return. You'll get some, and you should have some part of your portfolio in cash to take advantage of. It gives you freedom of movement. You can go and do things. But if you're taking your portfolio and reshifting it to majority cash, okay, that's in response to something that is very intangible.
We are seeing a lot of investors profit-taking, particularly with some of the Australian stocks that have generated pretty impressive returns. They're just simply going, I've done very well out of this. I'll take some profits now while prices are high. What are your thoughts on that?
What are you going to do with the money, and why do you sell? Are you selling in response to, I'm nervous about the market, so I'm taking money off the table?
Yeah.
So what's changed in your portfolio? So if you think about, okay, I don't want anything to be more than 10%.
Yeah.
And something is more than 10%, and you
so
take
it's a
some
rebalancing.
Of that money off the, no problem, go for it. But if you're telling me that a stock rallied X, and therefore I'm taking money off the table purely because of X, well, I would say, well, give me a decision on X. You know, why is it not going any further? Like, what is it you think about the company?
Yeah, what's the upside?
I think it's more about getting the right balance in your portfolio, that you understand all these the assets that you're buying. And then you could say, I need to sell X because the market has got really crazy about this one, because I know that it's not as strong as you're telling me. That's all fine.
If it's got a PE of 44 times,
that's all fine. But if you're just saying, I've made money, I want to get out, I'd be more inclined to tell people, sell the ones you're losing money on.
Yeah, interesting.
You know, bite the bullet. It's like playing golf. When you're under that tree, pitch it back out and start again. Don't think you can get over the tree. You know, you got in the tree because you're not a good golfer. Do the right thing. Hit it back out.
Just be smart about it. Fair enough.
Investment management, course management, you're all the same.
So next 3 months, so we're talking a lot to investors at the moment, and they are, many of them are used to a very low volatility world after the last few years, right? It's been marching higher, politely. Your thoughts about the next 3 months, say?
It'll be volatile. It has to be. It just, you know, the president said there's more to come.
Right.
It will be volatile. The
Do you reckon he'll be here in 3 months? Make a wild prediction for me.
Yeah, he'll still be here.
Okay.
I don't think he's moving anywhere. I think his voter base is giving him great sustenance. That's what they want to see.
Mm.
A year from now, I don't see the president not being the president.
Mm-hmm.
I do see him finding it challenging if his approach doesn't create the change that he wants to see.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be volatile because he's only just started.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's going to say, everyone tells me, well, not everyone, a lot of people say it's part of his negotiation. It doesn't really matter. If you push somebody, if you want to have a fight with somebody, and at the first opportunity they say, no thanks, at the third or fourth opportunity, somebody will say, okay, if you want to have this fight, we're going to have this fight.
Yeah.
And at the moment, China has been a modest respondent. And I would think that the president, if they're a modest respondent, I think the president probably wants a more dramatic response. I think he's trying to save $100 billion. Like, it's a lot of money.
Mm.
So he has,
he has to escalate.
I just think he has to. The central banks are trying to work out what to do with monetary policy because of tax, and the president's trying to work about trade.
Mm.
And so I think over the next 3 months, I would look at buying, we're about to do a roadshow for customers around equity derivatives and around buying options to hedge up their portfolios, and we would characterise it as this. We often buy insurance policies for assets that we appreciate, that we want.
Mm-hmm.
House, contents, car.
Yep.
We never want to actually execute on the policy. We don't want to have the car accident and make the claim.
Yeah.
But it gives us some comfort that we've got the coverage.
Yeah.
I think of investments right now as buying some protection for a designated period.
Mm-hmm.
So you might say, for the next 4 months, I want to hedge up my portfolio. How do I do it?
Yep.
And I think people at the NAB can offer you some solutions to that, or some ideas or whatever. I think, they won't be able to give you everything you want. But there's something to be said for saying, how do I hedge this portfolio?
Yeah.
Because that means, to my mind, about taking profit off the table.
Yeah, take the risk off the table.
It's that sort of stuff. What you want to do is say, how do I protect on the downside while allowing some of the upside to carry on if I've got it wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sleep at night strategy. So have that one.
Mm-hmm.
And have it for a designated period, that makes some sense to me.
Can anybody come along to the roadshow?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely, no problem.
Where do you have it advertised? This is a question on spec, by the way.
No.
We can send you
Some collateral, and we can put it up on the website, and we can organise phone calls and stuff like that. We can do all sorts of things at the NAB. So we've got roadshows happening all around the country. We've just done Sydney and Melbourne, but that's all right. We can do more of them. They're in response to demand. We sent out an email to some of our NAB customers just asking them, did they want to talk about these things? And we were swamped. So we think there's something to be said for the fact that we can offer you this and say, look, let's just have a chat with our guys on the equity derivatives just to say, it's not available to everyone, but it's available to everyone if you wanted to go to the ASX. There's all different ways to think about it. So all we're asking people to think about is event risk.
Yeah.
Just manage it. That's all.
Okay. Final thoughts?
This has been fun. I think there's something to be said for trying to cut through the white noise and have people not worry. I think the reality is everyone describes that the central bank is having a central bank put. It used to be very close to wherever you bought something. The institutions used to be aware of the fact that if things sold off, they could always hand it back to the central bank.
Yeah.
I don't think that put has been extinguished. It's just been extended further away.
Yeah.
But I don't think the central banks will want the global economies to go into a funk.
No.
So if you think that's the reality, that then might say to you, why is the market pricing what's happening when the central banks are sort of there anyway?
Mm.
They want to keep it going forward.
Yeah.
So then find a portfolio that says I can benefit from global growth.
Mm.
Picking winners, okay, I don't know about that, but global growth.
Mm-hmm.
Finding the right balance in your portfolio, using the fixed income market, having the right amount of cash. Just take that time once a month just to do it, you know, a taste test.
Mm.
Does it still feel like it's okay, you know?
Yeah.
It's that sort of stuff. Have a drink of the water, the Kool-Aid, yep, it's all right. So, yeah, final thoughts of that. Just make sure you think you've got it and you can absorb it and then buy the right portfolio for you.
Mark, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
This has been a really interesting and valuable discussion. I apologise to Mark for the last minute question about how people can get access to the Equity Derivative Roadshow. If you're interested, send us an email, yourwealth@nab.com.au, and we will find a way to ensure that
Absolutely.
You can get access to those sorts of insights, because they're really valuable and we know a lot of people are into it. So yourwealth@nab.com.au if you are keen. I'm Gemma Dale. Thank you again so much for listening. We love it when you tune into Your Wealth. You can catch us every week on iTunes, on the NabTrade website, or on Podbean. We love getting your feedback. If you would like to find out more about the roadshow, as I mentioned, or you have any questions about topics you'd like to cover in the future, email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. Look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.